I love that we made it to what I think is the biggest piece of this and why downtown zoning has been so important. Because we've talked a lot so far in this discussion about economic development opportunities, about vibrancy, about walkability, about affordability, accessibility. But at the end of the day, the town needs to develop in a way that is financially sustainable.
So, Steve Sherlock here for Franklin Matters, Franklin Public Radio, anywhere on the internet at WFPR.FM, here in the local Franklin area, FM dial at 102.9, here for a Franklin for All conversation with some key members of the Economic Development Plus Committee to talk about just that. And let's have them introduce themselves. You may recognize their voices if you know. If you don't, then you'll hear their name in their voices, and that'll help as we process this in between your ears as we put this out for both the radio and the podcast. So, ladies, Melanie, you first.
Hi, everybody. I'm Melanie Hamblin. Thank you, Steve, for having us here today so we can have this conversation. I am the chair of the Economic Development Subcommittee and the Steering Committee, or the EDC Plus, for the Franklin for All project.
And Beth.
Sure, I am Beth Whirling, clerk with the Planning Board and member working, I guess, with the EDC Plus on this Franklin for All project, as well as a resident of downtown Franklin on Main Street.
And Kobe.
Yeah, Kobe Frangillo, a town councilor and vice chair of the Economic Development Committee.
And last but not least, Bruce, welcome.
My name is Bruce Hunchak. I've been previously a member of the Franklin Board of Health for probably over 25 years. Not for the past five or six, though, but and I've been a member of the Franklin Zoning Board of Appeals for probably close to 30 years now, if not more, currently serving as chairman of that committee.
For those who are listening who are not aware, let's briefly recap. This started sometime early in probably even 2020, there was some discussions. The town got a grant in 2021, applied the funding to a contract for MAPC, Mass Metro Area Planning Council. And the work has actually started. The first Franklin for All forum was held on March 7th. There's a survey out now. And we're just going to talk through some of those details and what's going to come out of it. Melanie, what's one of your, clearly we've got a long timeline. We don't have any proposals yet. What are you thinking this will do for us?
That's a good question, Steve. So I feel like there's all this kind of anxiety about when you talk about zoning changes. And on the Economic Development Subcommittee, end of last term, Councilor Frangillo and I, we were trying to talk about some changes we could make to the zoning to maybe help create some potential for creativity in new development, some way to stop the stagnation. And because we constantly heard about, we have to do something, we have to change it, we have to make it a little bit easier. We have to do something. And so we're not experts on this, but we know what we want for Franklin. It's our town too, right? I think some people worry that we want it to be something that we don't. We actually want to be able to live there. We want to be able to go downtown. We want to walk around. We want to see happy families. We want places for people to look at public art. To do that is very complicated. So that's why we contracted with the MAPC to help us and to gather information. That's the stage we're in now. We want to gather the information to look at how zoning can create the things that we want to have there. So that's what I hope will happen.
Melanie, I like what you said and feel the same way. And being a resident of the downtown, I hope to see that the things that are already down there are expanded upon And from the planning board point of view, as a member of the planning board for the next few years of my term, I really hope that we can get some clear bylaws that will make it easy for people coming into the community to understand what they can and can't do, and be able to see where those uses are and what we can do to make it not necessarily everything by right, potentially, but let's make it easy for the developers to understand. And what do we want to see in our downtown and our commercial areas that will improve what we have and build upon the developments? That's what I'd like to see.
Zoning is the rules by which we allow development to happen in our town, and they should reflect the values of the town. And I think part of this process is bringing our zoning downtown in line with town's growing values of affordability, sustainability, accessibility, vibrancy, economic prosperity, financial solvency. This all comes out of setting the rules by which the town develops, and that's what this process is about.
From my point of view, Steve, I listened to the meeting. The 3 hours was like having teeth drilled, but you know, when we went through that forum. But I got to tell you that everything that everybody wants is already zoned for downtown. We had an ice cream parlor, Friendly's. They were there for 30 plus years. As far as an art gallery, I'm not sure that we've had an art gallery downtown, but I was a member of the Rotary for almost 30 years. We used to have an art show or an art auction once a year for a while. It was a good fundraiser for us. But, you know, then that slowly dwindled away. I mean, there's nothing to preclude anybody from having an art studio. There's nothing precluding anybody to having an ice cream stand. You know, as long as they follow the rules, it's zoned in town, it's zoned in downtown Franklin. So everything that everybody wants is zoned there now, but they don't have it. And I don't know if they think that zoning has put those people out of business. I don't think that's the case. I think it's the case with all small towns. They have a problem with generating, you know, walk-in clientele or people going by. I mean, there was a little bit of improvement when they changed the road, the main street, to two-way traffic as opposed to one-way, the state highway going right through the center of town. Mm-hmm. But, you know, everything that people wanted, we've had, you know, at least as long as I've been a resident of Franklin. I don't even want to tell you how long that's been.
And that's where I think the key is not going to be zoning for different uses, right? Most of the uses that we want are allowed. It's about zoning for different buildings and better buildings. And the reason why the buildings that we have that are falling apart, that businesses, even thriving businesses, continue to move away from the downtown because the buildings that are there are not satisfactory. Why aren't they being redeveloped? Because the rules that we have in place don't allow them to be developed in an economically feasible way. Right, they mandate a ton of parking. They mandate, they cap the, floors. They have setback requirements. You know, all the buildings that we love, both in Franklin and in other towns, are no longer able to be built downtown. We can start to change that so that some of our buildings start to improve at a rate that allows us to retain the types of businesses that we want.
Kobe, that's a good point, because Franklin was built probably most of the downtown pre-zoning. There's been some newer buildings that have been put up, but those buildings were built with just about zero setbacks. You know, I'm not sure what the parking requirements were at the time. Downtown Commercial 1 didn't have any parking requirements as far as I know. And then the zoning had changed. And, you know, I mean, everybody thinks that you got to have parking spots to have people come in. You know, I got to tell you that I know that a lot of the tenants downtown, the people that own the business, they take up a lot of the parking spots, you know, instead of parking farther away. But, you know, that's just my opinion. You know, I'm sure that somebody else is going to, but you're certainly right. Nobody's going to come in and do anything unless they can get square footage out of a building. You know, with the price of the property or the properties of the downtown, they're on zero setbacks. You start backing them up something, and then you're going to have a 20-foot wide building by however long you can get it. And you're not even going to get that because you got to put parking, you know, the parking requirements are there. And I don't disagree with parking requirements, but, you know, the town's got a couple of municipal lots downtown. I don't know why they can't be used. when the post office needed parking, they used to lease some spots on the train annex station on the upper level there. You know, if somebody else needed parking, why can't you use those lots and, you know, those parking spots? I understand when the snow comes, there may be a problem parking the lots, but those people that are parked there are probably going to realize that they're going to have to shovel themselves out. So, you know, I don't know. It's a catch.
I wonder if your comment why some of those lots can't be used, maybe it would be helpful to improve our signage in the downtown. I think that's been a discussion that we've had, is maybe people just don't know where the parking is or what the hours of use for the parking are. And perhaps it's something to further look at in our looking, not necessarily a zoning issue, but just an improvement in directing people where to be and how to park.
I think that those both Beth and Bruce, those, mm-hmm. those ideas have already, we've already started to discuss those in the economic development subcommittee.
Yeah.
Life has changed completely past pandemic. I don't know if we're there yet or not, but we have a lot of parking down there that people don't think they can use because they're for the commuters, but no, there are half the amount of commuters. So what do we do? So what we're going to do is we're going to open up more space, more signage. And I think there was an idea about a solar sign so that it could tell people where they could go and get a parking pass and all that kind of stuff. So we are thinking about that at the same time as this. I think it's all connected. Like, how do we get people down there to see what we have already? Mm-hmm. Right. And then, and there are spaces that worry me that when they get redeveloped, how do we bring back that feel that we like? And I think that's what this is about too, right? Not to have the parking in the front, not to have the, you know, there are places where the buildings are pushed way in the back and it's all parking in the front. And if it was reversed, I feel like it would be nicer. Mm-hmm. Hopefully that will come out, as Councilor Frangillo said, with the setback changes. I think that would bring back what we love about downtown.
I think in our immediate downtown, I'd also love to see a way to look at a clearly defined shared parking bylaw, something that allows for more of that in our downtown, and maybe get some of the business owners that own the large parking areas, which I know has been difficult in the past, to work together and to work with the businesses that are open in the evening hours to be able to use their parking that just sits there empty. How can we work to get people together? You know, some of those business owners that might necessarily have come to the table before, what is some incentive to get them there? And how do we improve our bylaw for our downtown or other areas that would allow shared parking? I feel like right now it's a little insufficient to allow that.
Yeah, I think in the run-up to the forum, one of the pieces or one of the sets of the information that MAPC put out was even a graph that showed the age of the buildings downtown. And Chloe, I think it was Bruce who mentioned before, some of the buildings were done pre-zoning. Some of the buildings, specifically downtown, date to the early 1900s. So, it's a time, and some of those are there. Some of those may remain. But the opportunity, I think, is at some point in time, if the zoning is such that somebody can, you know, revitalize, and that's kind of a loaded term in some ways, you know, redo the building and let's bring it to life in the right way to go forward so we can still have what we need.
Some towns have revitalized buildings. Take Walpole, for instance. I forget what the name of the plant was there, but they've revitalized that. Mm-hmm. I think there's some commercial business downstairs. They got apartments upstairs. They don't have a whole hell of a lot of parking that I can see, you know, because I used to work over in Walpole, and I remember there's a lot across the street. I don't know if they have anything under the building or not, but, you know, it seems to work for them. And the other one, people bring Walpole up as a bad example. I mean, if you want to see a really bad example, go over to Mansfield. I mean, there's a couple of big apartment buildings right next to the railroad tracks, you know, and I don't see a lot of parking with them, you know, unless they put something on, you know, I don't use those buildings, so I don't know exactly where they park, you know, they don't have a lot of municipal parking in Mansfield that I know of either. So, I mean, you know, it's pretty hard. Everybody wants everything, but, you know, you can't, nobody's going to come in and revitalize those buildings unless they can use them for what they want. And I think the best and best use for those buildings would be, you know, like everybody proposes, businesses or commercial downstairs with some sort of affordable housing on the second, third, and fourth floors, if that needs be, because to be able to have somebody come in and revitalize the building, they're going to need square footage. You know, unless you get somebody that hits the lottery and wants to own a building downtown and revitalize one, that, you know, that's not going to happen. Wouldn't right. be a good thing. Wouldn't be a good use of their money. But, you know, so people that are going to, developers that are going to come in are going to want to, you know, find a way that they can pay for the project to build it the way the town would like it. And, you know, once you add parking in, it takes up, you'd have to tear the buildings down, just put parking lots in there for, for, you know, to do anything. So, and that's not going to happen. So.
And we don't, that's not what we want either.
No, right? I understand that now, but I mean, I've been in the development world for a long time and it takes money to develop. It takes a lot of money to develop. And unless you can put a lot of units, you know, I mean, Kobe makes the presentation that, you know, and I think I just read an article, I think in the Globe today that, you know, that it's hard for people to find affordable housing.
Yes.
You know, so. You know, we're at our 10%, but I can tell you that I know that there's people in the works. So, you know, in the weeds, you know, want to come to Franklin, and there's still a couple of parcels around where they could build another 200 or 300 units that are close to train access and everything else, and they'd have their own parking on site. But yeah, I don't know. It's a tough road to hoe, and that's why the towns like Franklin that have a small center, you know, we don't have tourism. Like I mentioned, Hyannis and Falmouth at one of the meetings. They got tourism down there at least 9 months out of the year. Franklin doesn't have any tourism unless you want to call the Dean students tourists. You know, they're the only ones that are in here, and most of them are under 21, so they probably shouldn't even be in the restaurants that serve alcohol. But, you know, that's always been a problem, you know?
Yeah, I think one of the things that we, sorry, Kobe, you want to, I was just going to talk about the cultural district that brings in people. And we have to make sure that people have, when they want to come to the Black Box, they want to see our museum, they want to walk on the Ladybug Trail, that they have places that they feel safe. First of all, we have safe places for them to walk and to get around, but also they need to know that there's going to be a place to park, right? Mm-hmm. But we want it to be that they can go somewhere and then maybe get there safely. Like if they bike downtown, can we bring the bike trail closer? Do we have enough places for people to put bikes if they do bike downtown? How do they get there without running over people that are walking on the sidewalk? Right. So there's all that too. But we do have, you know, a pretty big group of people that come in for the Black Box, and they want to go to dinner. They want to come in and see what we have to offer. So I think we're definitely not Hyannis or but Providence or something like that. But I, you know, there are something pretty cool things around town.
I agree with you, Mel. We have some great attractions in our downtown, and I feel that more and more are coming, and there's been an increase in a lot of things. I know whenever the Black Box has a performance, if you're at a restaurant, they're packed. Mm. I know we have several in the downtown now, and I can say the few that I go to when the Black Box is going on, good luck getting the seat, which is a great thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Until at least after the show starts, in which case, you know, that they'll be going out and then you'll have a seat at the restaurant.
That's good. Then the new crowd comes in, right? So,
have a late dinner crowd versus the show crowd. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. I was going to jump on two different pieces there. One is, I mean, I think beautiful and vibrant places attract tourists, and there are towns that didn't have the same offers. If you go further back, you can look at a Newburyport, where if you ask them in the 70s, it was this, you know, no one wanted to go there. It was gross and ugly, but they protected their downtown, and now it's a beautiful place that you go just for that walkable downtown. A newer example is Hudson, who really rezoned and revitalized, and now you're seeing a lot of towns that are very similar size to us, a similar distance from Boston. You're seeing more and more people visit. So I think if you create a place that's interesting enough, then people want to come. And we certainly have the amenities that I think put us well on the map. We can just create a more interesting space. The other piece that I wanted to touch upon, though, is that this is not just the Main Street commercial strip. This is a much larger area than that, and most of it is residential. And so we talked, we mentioned affordable housing and housing affordability. I've talked about affordable housing as sort of, you know, in three different buckets, where you have, well, A, you have, you know, entire, you know, state buildings, and, you know, then you have subsidized housing, which is our 10%, but you also have general housing affordability, which is offering a diversity of housing options for people of various incomes, especially young people looking to move back, especially old people looking to downsize and stay in town, especially people looking to work for our schools and our emergency services. They need a certain type of housing that isn't these massive lots. So a lot of what we're doing is not just going to be looking at new commercial uses, but looking at what are our rules around residential at the same time, and can we add residential that doesn't mandate that we, you know, if we heavily restrict residential growth and incremental growth of our residences, then all you're going to get is the only projects that are viable are these, you know, 3-4 story multi, you know, large apartment complexes. But if you allow a space to breathe and grow naturally, as it did for, you know, thousands and thousands of human years, where it grew to the place that we knew now, where if you built up a little bit of wealth, you expanded it, maybe you added an accessory dwelling unit for your parents to move into, or for your kids to move into, maybe you split your house into a duplex, maybe you split your duplex into a triplex. These are the sort of things that we can allow that don't at all change the character of the town, but provide more and more housing options for, you know, again, family members looking to stay in town, as well as, you know, members that we're looking to add to our community.
Kobe, you might not be aware, but we've been doing that for more than 10 years here, Frank, as far as a second accessory dwelling inside of a home. But we take names. We give them a special permit for it through the ZBA. We take names so that, because what's the biggest fear that the neighbor has? It's going to turn into an apartment house somehow. So when the people come in, we try to make sure that whatever they're adding on to the house flows into the house. If those parents or in-laws or family, other family members decide to move out or go somewhere, so goes away the special permit. Not to say that they couldn't sell the place and somebody else could come in. They just got to come and get a permit for it. And what that does, it gives the building commissioner some clout when he goes to the house to find out who's living there. If the people that are living there weren't the people that were the benefit of the special permit, then he can fine them. You know, he can give them a zoning violation, you know, of up to, I think it's $300 a day if he had to. But that's the only way that you can manage systems like that. And I got to tell you, there's quite a few of them in town, and I haven't heard of anybody. We've had some people have complaints that the building commissioner had to explore, and it turned out that their complaints weren't founded. You know, they were just complaining because they saw somebody had an apartment up over a garage. But
Bruce, do you know, is our, sorry for not knowing the answer to this, but is our accessory dwelling unit bylaw restricted to family members only?
No, it's not. It really isn't. There's no such thing in Franklin as an in-law apartment. It's called a second dwelling unit. Yeah. And I got to tell you that they're almost, you can almost do it in any zone in town. You know, I mean, one of the things to build a second dwelling unit would be like to have, and I'm not sure exactly, I don't have a zoning book in front of me, but if you have 125% of the square foot area, you can build a second dwelling unit there. Now, there was a building commissioner back in the day that let somebody build two separate buildings on that 125% square foot area that they had. And that ended up having problems down the road because they built two separate units and they sold them as condos. And then you got somebody coming in 10 years later, 15 years later, wanting to sell the house. And now they want a variance from the town to be able to split their lot off from the other lot. And I got to tell you, they weren't successful because that's not the way the lot was produced to begin with.
So being a longtime member of the zoning board, do you feel our, what did you call it? It's called accessory dwelling unit bylaw is, what the word am I looking for? Is it, does it help promote units, do you think, for people, or should it be?
Well, it helps promote what Kobe was talking about.
Yeah.
If there's an in-law or parents who want to sell their house and they still want to reside in Franklin, that they can either sell the house to the kids and put an addition on. Mm-hmm. And you know, what makes a second dwelling unit is the ability to process or cook food. So that's basically what happens. I remember the first one that we had to deal with was up in Diana Estates. They put in, the people put an addition on the house. House was the size of a hotel. And the permit was already given, but the building inspector at the time wouldn't let them put the kitchen in because they needed a second dwelling unit approval. And, you know, obviously the building was already built. So what were we going to do then? You know, but
I guess what I'm asking is, do you feel our bylaw could be looked at a little bit more to allow for more and encourage for more units that could potentially help our housing situation in Franklin? Would it be better to look at that bylaw to expand it, which in my opinion, I think is a great opportunity to allow housing for the starting out child that wants to move and get out of the house, or the family member that is old and doesn't want to age out of Franklin. I think that maybe making that process a little bit easier for those families or small families with one child, or, you know, just wanting to stay at home. Kobe, you look like you had something.
Well, I think you got to the point that I think is key here. Is
a roundabout way of getting to my point.
bring it back to this process, right? There are certain things that are allowed. In fact, a lot of things are allowed in Franklin, but you have to go through repeated processes in order to do so. And a whole bunch of looking at our zoning is saying that if there are certain things that we want as a town that we agree are good as a town, let's make them easy.
Let's make them easier to happen
and go through. Yep. Because every hurdle that you have to jump through, every board that you have to go in front of, every special permit that you need to have is a risk, is a financial risk that you're taking. It's something, you know, you might not have time or expertise in order to do so. And this is what we're talking about when we're talking about, our rule of stifling development. If there are things that we all agree that we want, let's make them easy.
Are there certain zoning districts that we're studying right now in our downtown center or Franklin Center project that would make sense to maybe have accessory dwelling units that don't necessarily need to go to ZBA for a variance? Like, are there opportunities for, you know, as of right accessory dwelling units? I guess that's my question.
Well, in the downtown area in 4 and 5, you can have, multiple units. You know, I'm not sure exactly what the number is, but there's the ability to do that already. That, you know, but I don't
not,
think you need
not an accessory for. On a single family home. You can't, correct? You have to go to ZBA for that.
Right? I'm pretty sure, unless it's in like downtown 5 or something like that. You know, they could put another unit on. You know, if they could do it. You know, and you know yourself that anything more than 2, I think it is, or is it more than 3, has to go to the planning board for site plan approval. So, I mean, you're not going to knock that process out. You know, you're not going to change that.
I'm just talking accessory dwelling units, you know, that might be by right instead of variance.
So. Yeah, I think Beth and Kobe and Bruce, I think we all want the same thing, right? We want to encourage more units that not necessarily fall in the affordable category, but are affordable for people, right? So we need that affordable housing. We need the 10%. But we also want to have more housing for people that have a medium income, right? And so one of the other things I think we need to think about why the accessory dwelling is so important is because it allows for more residential areas or units without increasing the cost to the town for its infrastructure, right? We don't have to build another road. We don't have to put in more sewer. We can just have it in the same spot, right? And more. And I think that's one of the things that Council Frangillo talks about a lot that I've learned a lot from him about. And he could maybe expand on that a little bit, but it's something that, you know, we need to think about and how do we balance this all? And that gets back to the experts on the MAPC council that, you know, hopefully will help us. I did, and if you fill out the survey, we could plug the survey, mm-hmm. You know, that some of that stuff is in there. You know, where do you think accessory dwellings should be allowed in yeah. the area that we're in our study area? I think that was one of the questions.
But, Melanie, one of the things about the accessory dwelling units that we use, you know, that come people come through as a quote unquote in-law apartment, is they're family related. Now, you don't have to be family related, but I'd hate to see a lot of accessory dwelling units in a project or a building that's not owner occupied. You know, if you've got an absentee owner of that building, you know what happens to those. So that's right. That's one of the absolutely. Problems that you run into.
I agree
into.
With you on that, Bruce.
Yeah.
These are the sort of
and that's why it's a you know, it's this is tricky. It's not easy. Mm-hmm. I think Kobe, you wanted us to add to that.
Well, I was going to say these are the sort of things that the process builds out. I love that we made it to what I think is the biggest piece of this and why downtown zoning has been so important, because we've talked a lot so far in this discussion about economic development opportunities, about vibrancy, about walkability, about affordability and accessibility. But at the end of the day, the town needs to develop in a way that is financially sustainable. And currently, after hundreds and hundreds of years of sort of you build up wealth and only build out once you have that wealth, in the past 50, 60 years, we and Franklin is with, you know, thousands of towns across the country started developing in a way that was much more spread out, that had a lot of that relied upon a lot of built infrastructure. And what we're finding is it's not financially sustainable. And community after community have done the math and we're beginning to do the math on that. But it turns out it's not even close to financially sustainable, right? The infrastructure the amount that it costs to sustain the infrastructure for our current services and current development pattern does not pay for itself by property taxes. And so we need a way to increase our wealth if we want to maintain the same services, which I think we do, and if we want to maintain similar taxes, or at least not go crazy on the tax part, which I think we do, then we need a way to raise our income to have some more properties in the town that doesn't add to our infrastructure costs. And so that's using what the land that we have now, especially in our downtown, and allowing it just to breathe a little more, just to grow a little more, and we start getting more income out of the same amount of infrastructure. That's a huge, huge piece to making sure that Franklin stays the community that you want it to be.
Well, you're talking about taxes. I don't know if you've done it yet, but I think it's I've seen it on one of the agendas. What is it? Not the wastewater, but water management tax.
Stormwater.
That's what I was looking for the right name. Yep. The stormwater tax. You're talking about taxing people. That's a tax that nobody's ever, you know, most of the people aren't going to see where that's going. And I know that there's pushback on that too, but you know, it's there. I don't know how the council is going to vote on it. I would suspect, you know, they're going to probably vote for the money. Maybe not. I don't know. It's not my vote, but, you know, and you're talking about, so there's a tax right there. So everybody's going to pay taxes. It's what do you pay it for? And what are you going to get out of it? You know, you talk about infrastructure, the stormwater, you know, that goes somewhere. And I'm not sure we're doing it because we got to do it because the federal government says we got to do it. If the federal government wants to mandate something, I think they should send the money along with it to take care of it. But just my opinion.
Well, yeah. Actually, well, we could. That's a whole nother radio show, Steve.
We can come. We brought it up. That's all.
We can come back to that. That's for sure. But I think we've reached the point where, if you haven't already decided you need to be involved, this conversation should have gotten you involved with a couple of key concepts. We'll put out the plug in the show notes. We'll include the link to the survey, the link to the Franklin for All. We'll put in emails. Certainly the emails for the participants here are already publicly available. If you have any questions, comments, reach out to them. If you have ideas for a future topic for us in a future show, send it to us and we'll consider that. Because I think to the extent that this is the start of this process and it will go some number of months, this is still clearly in the information gathering stage. And one of the key pieces I think the forum meant to do was to start discussion around some of the key aspects of zoning. And in this brief 20-30 minutes, we've already elucidated around some of those zoning pieces, including the term accessory dwelling. So if you're not familiar with that, start Googling on the town site, getting into the details on the bylaws. And if those raise questions, then feel free to reach out to this group and they'll provide some insights.
You don't have to be an expert in zoning. We just need you to be an expert in Franklin and what you want Franklin to be. And that's where your expertise lies. And so please fill out the survey. Please continue to pay attention to the public process. We're going to, through our knowledge and through the knowledge of MAPC, take that information and craft it and take the academic expertise and what we know at the time, take that and craft it in a way that achieves what we all want to achieve in our town.
Exactly, Kobe. And I think I like to think about it as what is your vision for Franklin for its 250th birthday, right? We just had our 244. What we need, this is planning for 6-10 years from now. And what do you want, what vision do you have for the 250th birthday? Let's just put it there.
2028. Well, thank you for participating today. For the listeners, thank you for listening. As we've already touted, you've got some opportunities to reach out. I'm assuming we will have a further one. I know that as the information comes back, there will be additional public meetings, certainly town meetings, if not public forums, at which point you can certainly continue to stay involved to find out what the proposal is going to be, to continue to inform what the proposal should be. And I thank you all for participating today. We do this because it's my tie line, but I believe you all agree. We do this because Franklin matters.
Thank you, Steve. Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Steve. Thank you.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. By the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.